You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. It's a Monday mailbag. We're going to talk about how the Heat can help out some playoff teams with a trade, and if the Heat regret not going all in for Jimmy Butler. But let's start with some player pushback on tanking with this question from Billy, who writes in, "We all know TJ listens to Locked On Heat. I think he's a little tired of Wes and his push for the Heat to tank. This is obvious." Here's his response when asked about his thoughts on the tank from Shandell Richardson of The Athletic. Quote, "It's effing dumb. If you really think that as a fan, I don't think you're a true fan." He continued, "Why would you ever not want to put your best product out there? We were a playoff team last year. People jump ship at the first sign of trouble. In today's society, that's like built in." Tyler with some deep talk there. "Anytime something is too hard, you just don't do it anymore. You just quit. I think that's what's so satisfying about the direction of this team. Every season is different. We had to go through a lot of stuff early. We don't make excuses about it, but you see that we're trending in the right direction," says Tyler Johnson, coming off of two wins on a West Coast road trip. David, you know that I've got a lot to say about this, but I'm going to just go ahead.
I never thought I'd be in agreement with Tyler about anything, but he is spot on in his assessment, from the social commentary down to the observation that fans, or quote-unquote fans in Tyler's view, jump ship a little too early. I think it's 100% correct. But I understand the perspective that maybe this has been building for some time, but he's absolutely right. Why wouldn't you want to see this team, as currently constructed, try their hardest and make a push for the playoffs when they're clearly still a playoff team? I think they're still good enough. I really do believe that. And I think we're starting to see more and more evidence of that lately. And I don't see why you wouldn't just, you know, stick with this kind of group and see what they have to offer. If things were, look, maybe I'd be a little bit less optimistic if they hadn't won the first two games of the road trip. But you know what? With Hassan Whiteside back home in Miami, this has been a completely different team. And we're starting to see shades of real intensity, real effort here. And it's paid off. And to be honest with you, and again, in agreement with Tyler, I think this is a team that could really make a push. And I think we should stick with it.
I mean, what's next? Is Tyler Johnson going to write a piece for the Players Tribune, why millennials are ruining tanking?
It's true, they are. Along with Applebee's and everything else, they've ruined.
I read one in Forbes about millennials are to blame for Harley Davidson's lack of sales. I'm like, you know what? This is it. This is the final straw.
You ruined Harley Davidson.
Sorry, we're not buying enough motorcycles. We don't have enough disposable income because all of our motorcycle money is going to student loans. But so look, my issue here is not Heat fans aren't jumping ship at the first sign of trouble. This isn't because the team was 8-15 going through the first 20-plus games of the season. This has been years in the making. There is an understanding that this team is mediocre at best, is probably like stretching itself for 45 wins in an Eastern Conference that has four or five good teams in it. And it just is a rational thing. And I think Tyler Johnson is painting this picture that these fans are irrational, that this wanting to tank is a knee-jerk reaction, where I think it's the opposite. It is a very Heat fans, to me, the ones that want to tank for the most part, I feel like they're coming to that conclusion from kind of like an educated standpoint, where they're saying, you know what, I know that it's going to kind of suck to watch this team, but you know what, it already does sort of suck to watch this team. Wow. Like, so, especially when it's kind of loaded with guys like who are just disappointing, like Hassan Whiteside, guys who can't even get on the floor that you're paying $14 million to, like Deion Waiters. And it's just, you know what? Is the alternative of just watching a bunch of 20 to 25 year olds go out there and try really hard and maybe, yeah, they lose? Is that worse than the product that's on the floor already? No, it's not substantially worse than what it is. And at least there's a bigger upside than what this team has. And that, to me, is my issue with Tyler Johnson's comments. Is just I do think that the fans who want to tank for the most part are coming from this from a very rational point of view and saying, you know what, I'm willing to live with a couple down years if it means that we're going to have the upside that we're used to having as Heat fans.
See, I kind of disagree with almost everything you've just said, because to be honest with you, I think we're both in agreement that Dion Waiters, at the very least, if not overly effective all the time, is still a solid basketball player and, if nothing else, fun to watch. Is that something we can agree on?
Yeah, but I don't know if we need to care. Like, okay, so Dion is fun to watch every once in a while, but it's frustrating when he's just injured for the last 2 years.
Okay, you know what I mean? That's not his fault, though. And again, you could put the blame on the team.
No, but that's the thing. Nobody's blaming any of the players except for Hassan Whiteside. Nobody's blaming it, like Tyler Johnson, for making $19 million. I like watching Tyler Johnson
now,
play.
In 2017, really though, or was it 2016? 2016, we talked about this. We were all both in agreement about running it back. Like, we saw 30-11, right, and we thought running it back was the right move. And I think
everybody did.
Well, you know, that's the whole point.
But it turns out that it was the wrong move. And now it's time to pull the plug on it.
But you see, you're talking about pulling the plug on it like it's just going to be this instant transformation. Like what are the what is the clear path towards tanking? Sitting Hassan Whiteside?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. That makes the team better.
And then trading.
That makes the team better.
And then you trade the four assets. You just trade the four guys who are real assets on the team.
Goran Dragic,
Rodney McGrady, Wayne Ellington, James Johnson, Goran Dragic.
The last one
I trade on that list is Goran Dragic, because he's of actual value to the team. James Johnson, you got to move on from him. It's just because it's too hard. And you know that I'm not president of the James Johnson fan club, because I don't think there is one. But I'm a big James Johnson fan. You can't play him at the same time. Yeah. As Justice Winslow, and so for that reason, you just got to move him. And I think James Johnson could really help a playoff team.
Okay.
And I'd like to see him do that.
So how about this?
Wayne Ellington and Rodney McGruder, who are not coming back, you got to move those guys.
So, okay, let's say this then. So you trade those assets, or those players, because let's think of them as players, because that's the reality of it. And then you get perhaps a draft pick here and there, maybe some mediocre talent in exchange, or maybe a project like a Markelle Fultz in a best-case scenario. And if that's the case...
Worst case scenario.
I'm sorry?
That would be the worst case scenario. But sure.
But you know, I think a lot of fans would disagree on that, and I think they'd think that, oh, you're getting a top pick in the draft, etc.
We finally didn't have a full smart mailbag question. Let's not go down.
Yeah,
this
no, you're right.
It's like the first week in 3 weeks.
So the point is, though, let's say you're not getting a top three pick because you're not as bad as some of the worst teams. You're not a Phoenix. You're not a Knicks team. You're not a Hawks team, etc. You're just a little bit better of that, even if you trade away those assets or players. So you're still getting a top five pick, maybe a top 10 pick. And either way, you're getting a 19-year-old who still needs years and years of development. So if the end game is that you don't like how mediocre this team is and that you want to build towards something, even the process of tanking is still going to take years to develop. And in the best case scenario, maybe you have top level talent that actually develops and takes this team into playoff and title contention.
But this team already is years away from being in contention.
Well, they're in playoff contention. And theoretically, you don't have to trade away all those assets. James Johnson's under contract. Dion's under contract. Basically, the biggest problem on this is Hassan Whiteside. And removing that and Tyler Johnson's contracts off the book will all of a sudden clear your space up so that you can add another player in free agency that can vault you into title contention. Like what we talked about in our most recent...
I think, and that's what... And we need to do that. I think the Heat, if you move on from guys like Dragic or James Johnson and those real guys, because they're not going to be able to trade Waiters, they're not going to be able to trade Whiteside, they're not going to be able to trade Tyler Johnson, but you move the bigger salaries that have value in this league, all of a sudden you get onto that road of having some cap space. That's what the Heat need to do. It's just... I'm not saying that they have to blow it up like Phoenix did, you know? Yeah. But they do need... And just trot out a roster as bad as that... But they do need to be a little bit more forward-looking and say, you know what? This long-term four-year plan didn't work.
Yeah.
We all thought it would work at the time. It didn't. Let's trade whatever we can, get whatever assets in return that we can, and start to just loosen up this cap sheet a little bit, because right now they're a luxury tax team that's barely in the playoffs. That right now is not in the playoffs. Let's move on to this next question from Chris, who writes in, if we get 75% of what we got from Bam and Winslow and Phoenix... and they get the minutes they get during that game moving forward, is this team a playoff team? David, this question is right up your alley. We should mention that Chris sent this in after the Phoenix game. Bam and Winslow looked really good in that Clippers game Saturday night too, which, of course, the Heat won. They beat Phoenix. They beat the Clippers. So maybe we just avoid the tank completely, or do kind of like, hey, it's exactly what you and I have been saying. These young guys should be the starters anyway, or getting a bulk of the minutes for two reasons. You need it. You need to do it for their development, and they're just the better players on the roster right now. It's quite clear after these first two games of the 6-game road trip that that's the case.
I absolutely agree that they're a playoff team, and I think the problem is, and has long time, you know, long been the Hassan Whiteside, that he is just slowing down the style of play for this team. He creates too many disadvantages for this lineup, and it's been a problem. And we've both suggested that he's probably better suited coming off the bench. There is talent on this team. There is great talent, I think, in Bam and Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow, who we are seeing being much more confident, turning a corner with his playmaking and with his shooting. I think he's looked really, really good during the first two games of the road trip so far. I still think that they're a playoff team. I always did think so. I don't know how else to answer that, and that I agree with Chris 100%.
Well, we looked at this 10-game stretch as kind of a season-defining stretch. You know, you and I had kind of circled this part of the calendar well in advance. The 4-game homestand going into that 6-game road trip that ends on December 16th, the day after most of the free agents who signed over the summer are eligible to get traded. So the timing of it, the length of it, the challengingness of it, kind of ultimately turns into basically what is a season-defining 10-game period. I had kind of gone into that period assuming that Miami would blow it, and it would be clear by December 16th that they needed to kind of do whatever it looked, whatever they thought tanking looked like, to go do that. But they've won 4 of their last 5 games. Justice Winslow has never looked better than he has this year. I keep saying it. He has made, I'm not ready to go full leap, like I'm not ready to say a most improved player of the year type of leap, but he's made a mini leap. He looks more confident than he ever has. What stood out to me in that Clippers game, David, was that, you know, like in the first few years of his career, the good Justice Winslow games were just, it was when he was hitting threes from the corner, right, and that kind of just defined a good offensive game from Justice Winslow. A good offensive game from that, for Justice Winslow, is more than that now. He is pulling up from the mid-range, coming off of screens and creating for himself and others. He's hitting floaters in the lane. He's making layups now. It's amazing. And of course, he's hitting a bunch of threes lately. Look, maybe he's just being a little streaky, but he's been comfortable taking that shot all year. And you and I have been, you know, slamming the table saying, like, we don't care if he's missing the layups. He needs to be taking them. That's the most, he's getting to the lane, he's getting to the rim, and he's getting the shots. They will go in eventually. And now it seems like they are starting to go in. So with Winslow playing like that, Bam Adebayo obviously being the best center on the roster, we don't need to rehash that. And Josh Richardson being the second best player, or the number one player on the team right now, yeah, there's no excuse not to play those three guys, and maybe they are a playoff team in the East. And if that's the case, look, if this season defining stretch ends up kind of being the flip side of what I thought it would be, which is be like the big tank alarm going off, and maybe it's, hey, Spoelstra figured this out. These are the three guys that need to play the most minutes. And if this team is a playoff team with those three guys playing the majority of the minutes, then tanking isn't going to be as necessary as an option as probably thought, or maybe getting a top 3 or 4 pick won't be as necessary as we thought, because those three guys are good enough to lead the team to a playoff spot.
I agree. So, I agree 100%.
There we go. All right. Next question comes from PJ, who writes in, "Hear me out. The Heat are probably picking between 6 and 10 in this year's draft." David, you cannot get away from draft questions. Do you just hate this? "We need a pure scorer on this team, and anyone out of the top of the top 5 projected draft picks can provide that. What do you guys think of packaging Josh Richardson and our pick to move up into the top 5 on draft night, and which team would likely accept that offer?" So, David, before I let you hammer away at this question, as I know you're just chomping at the bit, let me look at Tankathon's projected lottery right now. If the lottery were to happen today, Phoenix is at number 1, Chicago, Atlanta, Cleveland, those are 2, 3, and 4, and then we have the New York Knicks, Brooklyn Nets, Washington Wizards, Houston Rockets, and then the Miami Heat, currently tied with the Rockets at 8. The Heat at 11 and 14, tied with the record with the Rockets. We assume at some point Houston will turn things around, so Miami should end up, regardless if they're a playoff team or not, should end up having a worse record than Houston. We assume Houston ends up getting out of this, but who knows. Washington, we'll see. I think Miami, if they were to really put their mind to it, could be in that New York Knicks, Brooklyn Nets kind of territory. But that wouldn't get them necessarily in the top five. So for me, I'm just... let's say they tank. They're not going to be as bad as Phoenix, Chicago, Atlanta, or Cleveland. But that fifth spot, if you could be worse than the Knicks or the Nets, that fifth spot would give you a 10.5% chance of the number one overall pick in the lottery and a 42% chance in a top four pick. So what I'm saying is, if the Heat really want to get into one of the top four picks, that's how you get there. Try to get the fifth or sixth slot in the lottery and just hope that the ping pong balls bounce your way. Let's not start trading the best player on the team just to move up a couple spots. I know you agree with that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely do. Moreover, I don't know that any of those teams actually would want a Josh Richardson on their roster. Like, I don't think he's that much of a significant upgrade over players they currently have or are developing, where they'd say, you know what, let's get rid of, in Phoenix's case, Josh Jackson. Would they do a Josh Jackson and the first overall pick for Josh Richardson? No, that doesn't seem very likely.
No way.
The Bulls aren't going to take on Josh Richardson because he's just not that kind of a star player. They've already got Zach LaVine there. I think that's their future, for better or for worse. The Hawks, the Cavs, I don't see it either way. I mean, the Cavs have too much payroll already with Kevin Love. I don't know that they'd want to make a plunge there. I think they'd rather infuse young talent, et cetera. They probably more likely want to trade away Kevin Love than acquire another veteran that can help them win now in Josh Richardson. So, yeah, there's a lot to break down at PJ's question.
Richardson makes sense next to Trae Young in Atlanta, but the Hawks are so forward-looking. Their plans are so long-term right now, it doesn't make sense to bring in Josh Richardson.
And they got Torian Prince, too, right? I mean, I guess he plays more of the off-guard position, but I guess... Yeah, you know, Richardson has incredible value, you know, and that he's a relatively cheap deal, and he's also a proven commodity in the league, so maybe some team might be interested. I just don't know that any of the teams that already are likely to have a top five pick would make that trade in order to acquire a guy like Josh.
I think if we wanted to assess Richardson's trade value, I think you could get maybe a pick between, and depending on what the team is, right? If you're looking at the end of the lottery where San Antonio right now is sitting at 10.
That's a good pick. I think that's a good fit for Josh, I think.
New Orleans even, sitting at 11. Does New Orleans, like New Orleans is trying to keep Anthony Davis in town, right? They don't want to get another 19, 20-year-old, to your point, David. I think a team like one of those, or even Minnesota, who had interest, they're sitting there at 12.
They got Robert Covington. They don't. I don't know that they need Josh on that roster. Maybe they're playing the two guard position.
Yeah, I mean, you move Rocco to the three, and if you give up on Andrew Wiggins, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, somewhere in that range, right? Where I think between maybe the picks 9 and 14, you could trade Josh Richardson for one of those picks plus whatever salary makes sense, and probably get a rotation player plus one of those picks for Josh Richardson. That seems like a fair value. But if you're Miami, You obviously don't do that, right? Like, there's no, unless you're convinced the next Donovan Mitchell is sitting there, or the next, you know, that would be San Antonio swapping George Hill and getting the pick that ended up being Kawhi Leonard. Unless you're completely, but even Josh Richardson at this point is a better prospect than George Hill was at that point. I don't see Miami doing it, but that would be the kind of the value that they would get if they were to do that kind of move. Next question comes from Washed Riley. Who writes in light of Gary Harris and Paul Millsap missing time, I think Miami should see about sending James Johnson and Ronnie Magruder to Denver. Denver has multiple trade exceptions, also the largest being $13 million. What say you? David, what do you think?
Well, I mean, that would clearly indicate that, you know, Miami is looking to at least not, if not embrace a full tank to you know, take on your plan, which is to kind of trade away what you can while you still can. The traded exception, because Miami is the team that they are with the salary cap that they are facing, the salary cap issues that they are, would not be able to use those trade exceptions at any point. So they probably just likely expire like most trade exceptions do around the league. So as far as their fit in Denver, I kind of like it from the Nuggets perspective because they're trying to tread water while they get these players back. Millsap's broken toe will keep him out for a few weeks. Harris is going to miss over a month, if I'm not mistaken, from his injury. Not only that, but they lost Jamal Murray to some injury issues. They've had some real problems there. And
Will Barton's hurt.
Will Barton's, he's missed most of the season, hasn't he? So
yep.
I mean, Denver is a team that's all in for right now, and I think they need to prove that they can do that. And if that means acquiring players that would likely be forced onto the end of the bench once those other players come back from injury, I think they would 100% do it. So it makes a lot of sense from the Nuggets' perspective. And again, I think Magruder and Johnson would both contribute immediately to those teams. I could see Johnson filling in as a starter right away in Denver and Michael Malone's system, and Magruder too. He would be getting significant minutes off the bench.
I like both of their fits. I agree. In Denver, I think those are obviously good fits. James Johnson slides right into that Paul Millsap role, and when Millsap comes back, you can play James Johnson as the backup Paul Millsap.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or as even a small ball five, depending on what Denver would have to move out. Yeah, you'd probably still have to trade a player back to Miami. You couldn't just do it for trade exceptions and call it a day. But just because I don't think Denver would do that. They wouldn't just take on all that more salary. I just don't see that. They're $6 million away from being a luxury tax team. I don't see them doing that. But what if, they could move, they like Mason Plumlee, but would they move Mason Plumlee for the more versatile James Johnson and Rodney Magruder?
Yes.
I think they would.
Yes.
And that would sort of be the outline of a deal. Maybe Denver has to throw in a pick or two, a second round pick, something like that, to make it happen. But I like the fit. My only thing, if you're the Nuggets and all this team is completely healthy, they also have Isaiah Thomas eventually coming back.
Right.
At some point now you're dealing with overcrowding and you'll have to make some decisions. But Magruder, expiring contract, Isaiah Thomas, you're not really worried about him. But Gary Harris, Will Barton, these guys are pretty much part of the future in Denver.
Right.
Is there a spot there for Magruder? Is there room there for James Johnson going forward? Maybe behind, but they've got a lot of young guys that they like in that front court. So that would be my question if I was Denver, but I think the fits make sense. This next question comes from Dylan. Says, what's up with Josh Richardson, who hasn't played well this last month or so? Do you think Miami regrets not trading for Jimmy Butler? David, let's do this kind of lightning round style. We don't need to talk about what's up with Richardson because we've kind of answered that, I think, on the last few pods. He's in a slump. It happens. He's not a superstar yet. Any non-superstar player has slumps. I'm not that worried about it. Unless you are. I'll let you
know. No, not worried necessarily. Okay. Like I said, I think he's just, we've talked about this before. He's taking on a lot as the team's primary playmaker, defender, and scorer. So that's a huge role and something he's not quite ready to handle and likely won't ever be ready to handle.
Do you think Miami regrets not trading him for Butler? The second part of that question.
I do not, no. I think they would love to have Jimmy Butler as is, but I think the team around Butler makes much more sense having a guy like Josh to be a complimentary star to him.
Billy Miz writes in, is the idea of waving and stretching Whiteside a realistic possibility? David, we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, so I checked in with our friend of the program and cap expert, Jeff Siegel of Early Bird Rights, who had a great contribution to our season preview. And he's a cap expert. He knows all this stuff. So I checked in with him to just make sure that my math was right and just sort of asking him about what the cap implications for waving and stretching Whiteside would be. And basically is what we thought on this show all along. $9 million you'd have to pay Hassan Whiteside through the 2021-2022 season. Now, the Heat, if they were to do that now, would still be on the hook for Whiteside's contract for the remainder of the season. So that's something to keep in mind. But Whiteside's expiring contract next year is worth $27 million. And then obviously that comes off the books and he's not on the team for 2020, 2021, or for 21-22. Now, if you're to wave and stretch him, he's off the team immediately, but you're still paying him $9 million a season through the year 2022. There's pluses and minuses to doing to kind of either holding them or to waving and stretching them. You and I were talking before we started recording here. They wouldn't do it now, I don't think, unless it became just such a locker room issue that it was better off just doing it. And we don't think that it's to that point yet. But if over the summer Miami wanted to clear about $18 million in cap space because X free agent really wanted to sign in Miami and it was the only way to clear that much money, you could if you could wave and stretch Whiteside, get that cap hit down from $27 million to $9 for next year, and if you're able to trade one or two of these other bigger contracts, all of a sudden you become a cap space team. But I only think the Heat would do that if the right free agent was basically saying, make the space, I'll come to Miami.
And that doesn't seem likely to happen, mm-hmm. given Miami's current construction, whether you move Whiteside or not. So In other words, it doesn't seem like it's a very good deal and one that isn't likely to happen.
Yeah, I think the ultimate thing, I think, waving and stretching might not work, but the Heat could do sort of what the Knicks did with Joakim Noah going into this year. Joakim Noah was an expiring contract. You don't have to wave and stretch him, you just buy him out. Just say, we're buying you out. Take your money, go away. And I could see that happening next year. That could be a possibility.
They've used the buyout before and to success, so I don't see why they wouldn't incorporate it at some point if they really want to move on from Whiteside. I mean, the thing is, it's so strange that they keep making these exceptions for Whiteside and his level of play. It's a very interesting, you know, from the front office perspective, they keep giving him chances. Maybe they still firmly believe in what he can do, but maybe this latest act of insubordination is enough for them to kind of just wipe their hands clear and want to move on from the Whiteside situation.
Yeah, and, you know, we still have to see how he reacts to being benched for Bam Adebayo long-term, which should be happening.
We could only hope. Yeah, we can only hope.
All right, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to your podcasts. Leave us a rating or review while you're there. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.